This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Back home, it's a bit harder to have that rational debate because of, you know, things like the sedition law and such. But academics, I think, have traditionally put forth very interesting discussions. They've yes. produced books. Recently, just around the Malaysia Day and Merdeka, mm-hmm. we had the publication of a book on federalism. It was called 50 Years of Malaysia Federalism Revisited, edited by two academics, Andrew Harding and James Chin. Now, a new book is in the works, also on the politics of federalism. The editors are Francis Hutchinson and Wong Chin Wat. We spoke to one of the contributors, Tricia Yeo. She's the Chief Operating Officer at the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, affectionately known as IDEAS. BFM asked Tricia what this new book project is about and how it differs from the Harding and Chin edited volume.
That looks a lot more at Sabah and Sarawak. So if you look at the book, many of the chapters look at federalism in terms of the agreement, the Malaysia Agreement signed between Sabah and Sarawak and Peninsula. So many chapters deal with that. Whereas this particular book project is really quite exhaustive in terms of looking at every single state, well, almost every single state in the country, as well as looking at functional domains. So the book looks at environment and natural resources. It looks at safety and security issues, how centralized the police force is, for example. It looks at economic planning and development, how the federal government essentially does all of the economic planning. I think the volume would also look at religion. So these are very broad overarching issues which essentially encapsulate everything about Malaysia.
Now, you know, this year's Merdeka and Malaysia Day celebrations have been, well, not marred, but they have had to contend with talk of succession secession and also polemics over the meaning of Merdeka and Malaysia.
Yes.
Now, in terms of federalism, and I think there's a lot of at stake in this question. There's been a lot of talk, and we asked Tricia, is this interest in examining our federalist politics a recent phenomenon?
I think the examination of federalism began only recently, perhaps from 2008 onwards, simply because prior to that, there was no real need to look at the different responsibilities and roles held by the federal vis-a-vis the state government, since they were all occupied by the one same party or coalition. And so the division of responsibilities only came into competition when Pakatan Rakyat and basically the opposition coalition took over major states like Selangor, Penang, Perak. And then suddenly there was this rush of academics and think tankers looking into the constitutional jurisdictions of the state and the federal government.
But even before the historic gains of the Pakatan Rakyat, states like Kelantan and Sabah had voted against Barisan Nasional.
Right.
Kelantan stayed firmly with PAS for decades. They have almost 2 decades now.
Yes.
And even Sarawak has maintained a level of autonomy. So I asked Tricia to comment on these states.
The study of Kelantan, Sabah and Sarawak certainly are really important in looking at federalism. I think the academic world probably has looked into these case studies for a while now. But at the same time, perhaps especially amongst the Klang Valley crowd, these are still states which are on the periphery of national consciousness, you know, whether for good or bad reasons. And because Selangor especially, I think, is so much closer to the central powers that lie in Putrajaya, that's probably where the distinction is slightly more blurry. How do you separate between giving, say, Selangor government the right responsibilities versus the national government, which actually sits in Putrajaya?
So here's the money shot, right? I asked Tricia, what insights did she and her colleagues have about federalism as it's practiced in Malaysia?
The main points were that, first, Malaysia was set up as a federalist state, so the original crafters of the constitution did have in mind that the different states would be given their own areas of responsibilities and jurisdiction. But over the years, this has actually changed because of the over-centralization of government. The fact that the Prime Minister's department and the federal government have far-reaching powers, and the nature of these shared powers have also changed, meaning that in areas that the state government used to have control over, this has also been very slowly but steadily usurped by the federal government. An example would be water services management, as well as the management of sewerage and local waste. So these two areas were originally under the state list in Schedule 9 of the federal constitution. And there were either constitutional changes or new legislation enacted, which changed them into the concurrent list. And, you know, when there are things which are in the concurrent list, it's more likely than not that the federal government will be the one mainly taking the lead over this particular area. So that was one of the main points. And then I guess the second point would be the federal government's transgressions into areas that the state government has natural jurisdiction over. So how over the years federal government has, you know, either made use of its powers to threaten especially opposition state governments because they've got control over finances, and the state governments depend very much on the federal government for their funding.
So I asked Tricia, now where can our federation go? I mean, what possible solutions are there to these kinds of dynamics?
Many of the academics feel that a more devolved, decentralized way of moving forward would be best, in the sense that states can be given more responsibilities. States should be given perhaps the right to seek for external funding sources without getting the approval necessarily from the Ministry of Finance, Treasury. And the concept for me really is that if there can be a participatory decision-making process from the smallest unit possible of people, of society, then this really goes down to the bottommost level of empowering local governments, you know, restoring local council elections. But having said that, the caveat is not everything needs to be decentralized in order to be efficient. So there's this tension, I suppose, between efficiency, effectiveness, as well as local democracy, and empowering the smallest unit possible in self-regulation and self-rule.
That's Tricia Yeo from the Institute for Democracy and Economic Affairs, otherwise known as IDEAS. Her contribution to the book project is a chapter on federal-state relations in Selangor and Penang after 2008. David, what she was talking about was the principle of subsidiarity. It's a principle that underscores the European Union and was established in 1992 with the Treaty of Maastricht. So, you know, I think there's something for us to learn when we look at all these other forms of governance.
Yeah. Subsidiarity.
Subsidiarity. It's got an interesting history that goes back to the Catholic Church. Oh. But basically, the idea is that a central authority should have a subsidiary function performing only those tasks which cannot be performed at a more local level. And there's a wonderful consequence of that, which is that people are invested in governance. They want to participate. Mm. So that's one of the great sort of benefits from subsidiarity as a practice. I'm Sharad Kutan. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.